Ireland's mighty shores, you'll discover great folk and roots music Thursday afternoons from 1 till 3.
Brenda and Roman bring you the singer-songwriters.
The Heartringers.
The Wrongwriters.
Celtic, bluegrass, and more.
So whether you land by design or wash up by accident, you'll like the sound of the waves on Regina's mighty shores.
Thursdays at 1 on Regina Community Radio.
91.3 FM.
91.3 FM, Regina Community Radio. Thanks for their generous support. Cafe Ultimate, under new management on the Scarth Street Mall. The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily shared by Radius Communications Incorporated, operators of 91.3 FM CJTR.
When you're growing up in a small town, when you're growing up in a small town, when you're growing up in a small town.
Well, it's Friday morning, and there was our theme music, so that means that this is Untitled. Untitled, once again, being your weekly overview of exhibitions, art exhibitions, and events happening around Regina. As usual, I am your host, Felipe Diaz, and joining me, as always, is Margaret Basai. Good morning, Margaret.
I like to call myself Margaret, the voice of doom, Basai. Good morning, everyone. Thank God it's Friday.
Margaret is a little worn out this morning. She's had a rough night, I guess. So, today we are going to again sort of stretch our parameters of what is visual art a bit, and talk a little bit about film, which, you know, for me constitutes in a lot of ways like all those qualifications for what is visual art, but I mean that could be a larger discussion.
I was just going to say, what is film if not visual?
Exactly, right. So today we are going to be talking about an upcoming a screening, because film has screenings, at the Saskatchewan Film Pool Cooperative. It's going to be happening tonight at 7 p.m. and the film pool is located at
Suite 301. 1822 Scarth Street.
There you go.
Sweet. So, what are the directions for getting there? I guess if you're in the Scarth Street Mall, you're pretty close to the Cornwall Centre, right by the Bank of Montreal building.
Right across the street from the old City Hall Mall kind of place. Well, everyone knows
Tramps. Yep. Tramps is also next
door. There you go.
Squish between the bank and Tramps. You just go in the front door, label Saskatchewan Film Pool, take the elevator or the stairs to the third floor, and there you are.
Right.
And it's my understanding that the screening will start promptly at 7, unlike the old days of the film pool where things started around 8. And there'll be food at 8 o'clock. They're catering Chinese in.
My God. Wow, that sounds nice.
Well, yeah, because it's premiere night.
Right.
So all the new work that's done by the film pool members is showing.
Absolutely, right. So this is a screening of the members of the film pool, and these are new films that have come out and that haven't been screened in Saskatchewan before. Is it?
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part, yeah. Okay, so let's just go a bit through the lineup here, and we can hopefully try to make some sense out of what's going on over there.
Yeah, Phil and I were actually really lucky, and a big thank you to Catherine Weeb and Mark Bradley for letting us do this. We were able to preview some of the films that are going to be playing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So we were able to, because usually what happens with film screenings is you go to them, and then there's no chance to ever see them again, so...
Yeah, so like this is your big chance to go and see those things. Okay, so we have two films by Jason Britsky. And now the first film is called Moving Violation, and the second one is called Shooting Star. Moving Violation he calls it, what does he call it?
It's about Regina.
Yeah, an examination,
landscape.
Here we go, an examination of the texture, rhythm, and beauty that resides hidden within a community. So he's taken his camera, two cameras, I guess, or he's recorded it in two different versions, and he's gone and done sort of like a landscape examination of Regina, the downtown area for the most part, and those buildings that have been abandoned as being like his
yeah, and he's intricate with a lot of archival footage, which is really nice.
Right.
Of archival film footage.
Right.
Of Regina.
Of like the tornado and just the
some kids skating. And
yeah, and
really
and
stuff.
And the development of it, but definitely there's like this sense of history that he's trying to work with and develop.
It's like the Joni Mitchell song, the sense of history that's, you know, been paved over into a parking lot.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, I am. You know, I'm not that familiar with Joni Mitchell, so... Okay, but let's talk about the film.
Do you want to do that, or do you want to just talk about the whole lineup and then come through a couple... themes.
I think we can go through films and sure. then make connections as we go, because I think that
the linear film process. See, that's a good thing about film and a bad thing. It's not like sculpture, art, like paintings, where you can just go, and if you're not liking it, you can just, you know, move on to the next one. Right. Film has a start and finish.
That's right. And you poor suckers have to sit through it all. Okay, at any rate, so in Moving Violation, yeah, like, again, you know, he deals with this sense of landscape, and particularly looking at the landscape, which I find kind of interesting. He does frame it in terms of texture, rhythm, and beauty, which again puts it in, for me at any rate, puts it into like a more modern sense of what it is to make a film and using the medium in that particular method.
Yeah, but as a filmmaker, he's not restricting himself to an entirely formal examination.
No, absolutely.
Like he's got reflections and interesting ways of filming the landscape
that
are really neat, and you might find yourself going, geez, I wonder how he got that shot. But he's not obsessing with that process,
which is
what the modernist filmmakers would have done.
Right, right. So
he's more interested in conveying that text about Regina, which is postmodern.
I don't know if he's so interested in that text, but he does intercut it with these other historical processes. As
right,
well.
And he definitely shows you the parking lots.
Yes.
So you get this real idea of, you know, what he's lamenting.
Right, which are all those buildings, all those spaces that did carried meaning, or that carried some sort of weight in at least a historical way.
Well, and I think he really implies that the life that went on in Regina, because he's got all those shots of people doing stuff and having fun, and he's got the soundtrack of children's playing.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, absolutely. Like each one of these spaces before they became parking lots was filled with people, right? And they all had their own narrative. So that there were these spaces that were developed throughout the downtown area that were filled with narratives. Like, they're not empty spaces, but by demolishing them, by turning them into parking lot, they become more empty.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that's what he's looking at here. That's the lamentation, as far as I see.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So in terms of like the urban landscape, the way that is shifting and moving away from, or at least in this film, I think moving away from a human experience and in more into a car oriented experience, right? Like
cars.
Tear down a building to put up a parking lot. That's what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
and that's really cool, because he does have images of the streetcars that we used to have in Regina.
Yes.
And that was all about pedestrian traffic as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they're gone.
Absolutely.
Okay, Margaret, the voice of doom.
That was great. But as you can see, like, that's what juxtaposing those nostalgic images into this other sort of narrative that comes along. But what's also very interesting is the way that he's looking at these things, like through the camera. That says something, I think, for me in particular, about the way that a camera orients the viewer and the filmmaker and positions them within a dialogue around the city, which we'll get into later. I'll
Excellent.
Save that one for a little while. Push that aside for now, because I want to continue on with this idea about landscape and then talk about Leah Nakoneshny. Is that how
I think that's how you say it.
Okay. Well, I apologize.
And now that we have said
that's
it,
how I
Leah, we're just going to call you Leah.
That's right. I apologize if I mispronounced it, but there you go. And her film, Turn to the Wind, right?
That was a beautiful film. It turns out it was her first film project when she was a first-time filmmaker when she made that. And it's shot, I think she's from Gull Lake, and they chartered a plane around the Swift Current area. So shot in southern Saskatchewan. Am I losing myself geographically?
No, you're pretty close. It's actually filmed around Gull Lake.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so that's the only...
I was talking to your husband, and they said they chartered a Cessna out of Swift Current's airport.
Oh.
And so a lot of the shakiness that you see in some of the aerial photography, he said, wasn't the camera shaking, it was the plane.
Always a fun experience. Okay. So the thing about, of course, about this film and the way that it deals with landscape, as we've been discussing already, in the way the way that this film was put together, i.e. the idea of aerial photography and southern Saskatchewan, it's definitely about the prairie.
Yeah, and I think her concern really was documenting the appearance of the wind turbine on the prairie.
Yes, yeah, and like the flatness of it, but also that photographing that thing that is unphotographable. I was thinking about this morning as I was walking my little girl to preschool, is that we have an idea of what wind is. We have one name for it. Wind, except for like particular things like Chinook or Zephyr or blah blah blah, but those are particular winds.
Yeah, we should
have
100 names for wind in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, you think really so, should. Right? And it really should have a much more. I think that every artist in Saskatchewan goes through a phase where they try to document the wind, right? Or somehow take that into account into their work, and that's what Leah is working on here, right? By looking at the landscape of Saskatchewan, in particular those embellishments on the landscape, which are the wind turbines, and documenting the way that they sort of take up space and the way they use wind. She's really looking at that particular force in nature.
Yeah, and I think this is really made abundantly clear with the last shot of the film. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that could have been the whole film right there. It's a time-lapse shot. And there's a really funny story Simon told me about that. I'll get into it later. Actually, I'll just say it now. Usually time-lapse, you get an intervolator. It's a little animation motor that takes a shot for you once every 6 seconds or something. And so you get an image. Anyway, they couldn't find an animation motor. So they sat out in a field for 6 hours at minus 10, clicking every 6 seconds.
Ouch, that's just painful.
Yeah, it's just incredible when you look at this and you take, it was cold.
It looks cold.
But it's beautiful, just beautiful. What it is a portrait, I think, of the wind pushing the clouds by during a sunset, ending up in night. And so what my point was that you could see the wind pushing this, I'm flailing around the studio this morning with my arm trying to show the wind.
Let me demonstrate visually. Right? But that's the thing about the wind, right? Is that it defies description. It's like that unnameable process. It's really hard to pin it down as to what exactly it is, and the way we can describe it. I mean, we can talk about barometric pressure and the velocity and direction
and it's still not like walking Madeline to preschool this morning.
No, exactly. And you can bring in all these other terms about literature. Where I was going with the Zephyr and the Sirocco and the Chinook and like all these other, the Nor'easter, right? We have names for winds and we have ideas around them, but there's still something about it that seems to defy description unless you start to go into this visual realm, right? This is what wind does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that And again, you know, we have two films about landscape so far. We're like halfway through the show. We've only discussed two films. We have two films about landscape, but they're both viewing landscape from two particularly different areas, right? I was talking a bit about the way that he's looking at it and the way that Leah's looking at landscape. I mean, there's two different sentiments, and ones that are very... And that I think have a lot to do with, that may have to do with gender, right?
Which is really funny, because I know, having talked to Simon about Leah's process, that she's more of a formal filmmaker, and that her intent was to go out and simply record the landscape and just show you the wind and make something that was good to look at.
Yeah, but...
And yet I know that Britsky is all about this sort of, like, deeper philosophical meanings, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. He has these incredible layers of thought that go into his
right,
film.
Right, right, right.
And... Usually, but, from I guess a gendered mm-hmm. point of view, you would expect Leah to be more philosophical and Britsky as a man to be more formal.
Yeah, but I think that's not the case here. Instead, I think it's kind of reversed. Turn to the Wind is way more poetic, and it's got like a lot more rounded edges to it than say Moving.
Oh, now you're
violation.
Just talking dirty.
Oh, jeez. I don't think so.
What is it about women artists and rounded edges and softness
like, those,
and beauty? Like, good grief.
No, I wouldn't say beauty is associated solely. That's another discussion, right? But I think that, you know, stereotypically, we do make those kinds of connections, right? Like, that's I think, a fair realm to go into in that kind of way. Whereas Moving Violation, again, is about, you know, it's also kind of about... it's all about like the city and the hard edges.
Yeah,
blah,
but
blah,
see,
blah,
like
blah.
To me, mm-hmm. Britsky is very sentimental. as a filmmaker. And usually women artists are accused of being sentimental.
Do you find his work sentimental? I don't find it sentimental at all.
I remember one film of his that he lingers on the shot of his parents the dock.
Hold on a second.
And he's got his mom's head pauses on his dad's shoulder.
We're jumping ahead here because we're talking about Moving Violation, not Britsky's films, right?
But no, all these the sounds of kids playing, right? The archival footage, the people playing street hockey, the streetcars. It's history, and history is sentimental.
No. No way. I totally disagree.
Well, let's talk about, let's say, Gerald Saul's film, then, about death and destruction in Regina.
Absolutely. I mean,
Toxic Six Final, I think it's called.
Yeah, we were talking about a bunch of films here, and sort of we were making some sort of connections between gender, and one of them was definitely Toxic Six, which was Gerald Saul's film, and it's got a very short description in the program for it. Time races ahead of you and you will never win. Cinema decays and we do not inherit the earth. You know, that's pretty much it. And what that film is about, if I can you describe it a bit?
Well, he documents a great deal of the construction and deconstruction process that's happened in Regina in the last year. So, like, the Bay Parkade going down.
It's not deconstructed. So deconstruction is not what was happening there.
Tearing things down.
Tearing things down, yeah, it's different than deconstruction.
Well, deconstruction, I guess what Phil is referring to is, you know, jargon in the art world.
No, it's more of a philosophical term.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Sorry. I was just trying to have a bit of a pun-like thing there, but it just fell flat. I'll leave the puns up to Phil.
Oh my, we're having...
it's about destruction and how when you're looking at things being built,
right,
you can't tell if it's being built. Oh, there go all my notes. Or if they're being torn down.
Right.
And so he went and documented a lot of this, but he's also shot it in high-con black and white.
Yeah.
And he's hand-processed it
right,
to get a really aged look to the film. So the first time we watched it, it looked like it had been buried in the ground for about 35 years.
Right. So it's about building things up and building things up and tearing them down again, right? And sort of the cycle that urban landscape goes through in the sort of the construction and reconstruction of itself continually, and the way that those spaces that are reconstructed shift their meaning and shift their purpose.
Absolutely.
Right.
And he's got the soundtrack with a clock ticking that speeds up.
Right, and that's also reflected through the process itself, that hand processing idea where things are constructed, but are constructed in a very I can't use any other terms except for hand. You know, you get a sense of you get a sense of Gerald's hand within the process of making these films.
Yeah, if you know like anything about making films, you would recognize that he's done hand processing.
Exactly, it's
film's
not
got an aged look.
Yeah, it's not very slicked. It looks old and like it's been broken down all on its own. I think is the point that I was trying to get to
yeah,
in a very
it's
awkward
aged.
Way.
Yeah, and I guess it really draws attention to the surface of the film because you can see the degraded surface.
Yeah.
And the breakdown there. My point was, though, that Gerald's film, in opposition to Britsky's, I don't think Gerald's film is very sentimental.
You don't think so in the same way?
No, not at all.
No, because I think it's about the same way, right? Because the things that, like the footage that Britsky uses is not like his photo album. Like it's not like his other film that you were mentioning where it's his mom and dad.
But there is photo album shots, right? Because he's got that whole, like, Britsky's got those archival images.
Yeah, but I still don't read them that way is the problem, right? Like they don't come across to me as being like home photos. They come across as being like images that you would have pulled out of some sort of a bank, right? That like this is the history of Regina, right? So he's going through the same process, like he's articulating similar issues but in a slightly different way. Like he doesn't use the hand processing technique, but it's still about that reconstruction, because like the images of the tornado are not sentimental, nor are they even that nostalgic.
The kids playing hockey on the street were.
Hold on a second. But nonetheless, he uses that image in a particular way to again reiterate this idea of reconstruction and rebuilding and the way that those spaces within the urban landscape break down and come back up again, and more importantly, the way that we as humans inhabit those spaces, right? Which is not, again, for me, like even though those kids are playing hockey and there's the sound of kids playing with them, it doesn't inspire in me any of that sense of sentimentality about these spaces. At most, because again, I get that sense of decay and reconstruction, and he's sort of noting its passage.
I guess what I'm doing, Phil, is I'm contrasting these films and mm-hmm. these filmmakers to sort of more of a larger sense of this body, this sort of history of mm-hmm. avant-garde film, mm-hmm. where people like Michael Snow had made films that were very formalist.
Right.
You know, where you take a camera, you stick it on the top of a machine, and you just record the landscape in a circular fashion over and over again for hours, and you're going, what the hell is going on here? Like, it's all about the machine and the way it's documented. And these guys are so not about that. They use a lot of those techniques, mm-hmm. but they have a lot of meaning infused that goes on beyond just the surface of the film and making you recognize this is film.
Yeah, you know, but that's fine. Like, again, you know, you can go into larger discussions around the urban landscape and space within the urban landscape and the way that it's used and the purposes that it's being rebuilt for. I mean, Britsky makes a solid point by bringing up the idea of the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but then you compare that to, like, to Leah's film, again, which is really more about the poetics of the space, and you start to get into a different area, a different realm, right? Or that's what I would say. Big debate there.
No, it could be, because, you know, mm-hmm. there are some gorgeous moments in her film.
Absolutely, right? And I think
maybe that's the sunset, you know? That sunsets and poetry just seem to go hand in hand.
Right, right. And so
bringing into, like, some other films into the fray.
Yeah, okay, in the last 4 minutes, if we talk about some other films, Britsky has another film as well called Shooting Star, which, I mean, we can talk about for the next 4 minutes easily, because that one also has a bunch of layers, and he says it's about one thing, and I think it's about something else. Diane Ouellette has a film called Decisions, which is a very, very short film. It's like barely even 2 minutes long, which is also about a sentiment in a particular way.
I think Diane's film is self-explanatory, that you go to see the film and you'll just know.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's about
making decisions,
what that feels like.
Yeah, and it's pretty quick. You know, you blink and you'll miss it. It's
yeah,
that kind
that's,
of
it's unusual for her work, and yeah. we kind of think that maybe it fits into a larger body of work that she's working on right now.
Yeah, and that was the big discussion we were having around her work, is how does this fit into like everything else that's going on? And at first, it doesn't seem like it really does in a very... it doesn't stand alone, I don't think, in terms of film, but... Excuse me. If you consider it as a part of her larger body of work, then it starts to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what else do we have? Oh, there's a really great film by... oh, my God, I forgot his name.
I'll look it up quickly here. Percy Fuentes?
Percy Fuentes, who is an absolute genius when it comes to using the apparatus.
Yes.
And this is sound animation and computer animation all melded together to tell the story of two snails hitchhiking to Toronto, but they've gone the wrong way. And there's a whole bunch of other characters. It's won a lot of awards, and Percy's just amazing, and you have to just see the film.
Yeah, this film sounds really exciting to see. Unfortunately, this is the only one we did not get a chance to see the other night.
So we're not going to talk about it.
but we can talk about it a bit, because I think, again, you know, if there's this film, I think is definitely worth seeing, as the rest of them are. Mm-hmm. But this one, I think, will really sort of inspire a lot of people, and also work. I mean, the way that he's, of course, pushed the technical medium is really interesting. Plus the types of dialogues he's tries to bring into the film, from what I've read about it, mm-hmm. sounds really interesting as well. So, I mean, I'm intrigued. I'm curious, right?
Yeah.
I've seen the other films, too, and they're also quite good and also worth seeing for a lot of similar reasons, too, right? Because the other film we haven't mentioned yet is Papa.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yes, which is also by Gerald Saul, Toxic Number 2. It's part of his Toxic series, and this film, I think, this is, I think, a lot more sentimental. In a lot
yeah,
of
I
ways.
Know. I was just gonna say.
Yeah,
and I really like it, but then I'm biased.
Yeah, well, but so Papa is about his little boy, and it's again a hand processed film that is all about exploring his relationship with his son. Right, and his family in a lot of ways. Right, Margaret?
Yeah, and it's got a lot of hand tinting to it. And even though it's got a lot of work on the surface, it's got the images that are within the surface also convey a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald's feelings towards his family, I would guess. And
Yeah. And so there was some debate, I think, in this film. We have so little time. So maybe...
Maybe we can talk about Shooting Star and Papa, both in terms of masculinity.
Unless you can say it in one line really quickly, because, you know, our time is pretty much up.
Well, I think there's a lot of guys today that are going, you know, it's hard for me to know how it is to be a man. Like, I just can't watch Sean Connery as James Bond.
No, it's totally unreal.
For
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And so they're looking for ways to be, like, how to be a guy.
Right.
And these artists are both looking at that question very seriously, and that's reflected in their work.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that is one of the great values, I think, of this exhibition, particularly for men, is going in and seeing these films, because the way that they deal with these issues... It's not like overly sentimental in a lot of ways, and I think it fits more with the masculine paradigm that we have in Western culture right now.
And so I propose, Phil, that we should talk about that paradigm next week.
Well, if we can find an appropriate show, we will. Okay, so very quickly, do you want to go over some of the openings? Because there's two openings I think we should mention.
Well, once again, the film pool, 7 o'clock tonight. Neutral Ground has an opening Saturday at 7 p.m. I'm not familiar with the artist.
Kim Dawn, she's a performance artist. It's another performance piece, yeah.
Excellent. And the Sherwood Village branch of the Dunlop Art Gallery is having an opening and meet the artist on Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Right, and that's Chris Gurgley.
Yeah, he's a photographer who's taken black and white images of Regina.
Yeah, yeah. So again, some two excellent exhibitions to go and check out. And great. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good weekend. Try to stay out of the wind.
And a big thank you to the McIntyre Street Gallery. I went to their opening last week, and there's some really nice art up on the walls.
Absolutely, yes. Thanks once again to McIntyre, our generous sponsors, for supporting us. Okay.
It's a warm and intimate place to enjoy art. The McIntyre Gallery at 2347 McIntyre, just north of College Avenue. It's easy to get to. The McIntyre promotes the work of Saskatchewan artists, especially women artists, in the work of emerging talent. In a delightful older home, the McIntyre invites you to the main floor for current exhibitions, while upstairs, check out the representative works of each of the gallery's main artists. You can view artwork on the website at mcintyregallery.com. Come on in, out of the cold, to a warm, intimate place, and see the art at the McIntyre Gallery, 2347 McIntyre Street.
Hi, this is Jen, host of Sweet Sweet.